Up until now, we've been discussing ways in which mindfulness practices can be used to help folks with a wide variety of anxiety disorders. But of course, anxiety disorders come in a number of different flavors, and it can be helpful to look at which particular practices and which particular approaches are going to be most useful for the various disorders. Let's start with OCD, or obsessive compulsive disorder. I find it very helpful to think of OCD as fundamentally a disorder of doubt. What happens when we have OCD is we desperately want certainty, we desperately want control. So the person, for a classical example, who goes to the men's room or the ladies' room and washes their hands and comes out and starts to think, did I wash my hands sufficiently well? Might I have contracted a disease? Or the person who leaves home and thinks, could I have left the stove on? Goes back and checks it, goes back out again, and after a few minutes thinks, well, it's possible, just possible, that I overlooked it when I went back, and maybe the light was on a little bit. What they want is they want to know for sure that things are going to be okay. And of course, in the universe as it's construed, we never know for sure that things are going to be okay. We never have certainty about anything. So one of the ways that we can use mindfulness practice is to help people to start to shift their relationship to the world. We're going to talk about this in more detail in a little bit, but basically to get it that everything changes, and in fact that our thoughts are relatively unreliable, so that we can never be sure of any of our thoughts. Now that, of course, is a tough pill to swallow, and we have to move gradually to help people to begin to consider that this might be the case. More concretely, we can use mindfulness practices to help people observe their obsessions and observe their compulsions. It's useful to help them have an understanding of what these are, that obsessions are recurrent, persistent thoughts or images that bring on anxiety, and the thought of the house burning down because the stove is on or getting the dreaded diseases, while compulsions are repeated ritualistic behaviors such as checking or hand washing, or mental acts like counting or praying or reviewing things, events that have occurred over and over in a kind of rumination way, that reduce the anxiety temporarily. And the key in working with both obsessions and compulsions is to help people to notice that both the obsession and the compulsion, oddly, the symptom is actually designed to try to avoid the feeling of anxiety. In the case of the obsession, it's worrying and going over and over the same territory gives the illusion that by thinking about it, somehow that's going to help keep me safe. And the compulsions, more obviously, when you wash your hands, you have the momentary release and feeling like it's going to be okay. But the problem is all of these things are very much like addictions. They feel good in the short run, but in the long run, they don't work for us very well. In fact, in the long run, they hook us on the very painful experience, the very same painful experience that we're going through the activity to try to avoid. So when we're going to use mindfulness practice, what we're going to do is, in the case of the obsessions, we can use thought labeling to simply watch them coming and going and let them appear and go. It's not that we're going to try to block out the obsessional thoughts, but rather we're going to let them appear and go like clouds in the sky across the backdrop of perhaps the breath, perhaps the sensation in walking meditation, eating meditation, whatever the sensory object is that we've chosen in our practice. In the case of compulsions, what we're going to do is ask the person to interrupt the compulsion, to not go back and wash their hands, and then use mindfulness practice for urge surfing. Now, urge surfing involves being with and feeling the sense that I got to do something, and just noticing how that urgency feels in the body, noticing the tightening of the chest, perhaps the hunching of the shoulders, perhaps the motor impulse to do the thing that the compulsion that the person thinks would be helpful to them. And much as we talked about using mindfulness practice to increase the capacity to be with various kinds of physical discomfort, we can use it to increase the capacity to be with the urge and to coach people how to do that. Now, another difficulty that people have doesn't show up as frequently probably as OCD kinds of things do in the clinical arena are specific phobias. This is folks who are afraid of animals or driving over bridges or getting on a bicycle. It could be any one of a million different specific things that people are afraid of. And here, I'm sorry to use the phrase from a Nike commercial, but you want to help people to just do it. And what we want to do is help folks to shift their goal from how do I do this, how do I get the anxiety to go away, to how do I live a full life. And if the goal is to live life without any restrictions, then we use mindfulness practice to ride the waves of discomfort, to ride the waves of fear when they come about, to be like the astronaut I described earlier who felt plenty of fear as he went up in the spacecraft. Fear of situations is very similar. These are things like fear of being alone, fear of the dark, fear of being out in nature, the woods, or perhaps fear of blood and needles, or even bodily events. People are afraid of choking, of eating certain foods, of vomiting. Here again, we want to take the just do it approach, encourage the person to do it, but use mindfulness practice so that they now have a tool that allows them to feel the feelings that come up, to simply notice the transient nature of the feelings that come up, of the anxiety that comes up, the disgust that comes up, whatever it is, again, with the goal of increasing the capacity to be with the discomfort, rather than we're going to try to make the discomfort less or go away. Now, GAD, or generalized anxiety disorder, is interesting because that's folks who feel stressed all the time, whether it's, you know, about the to-do list or simply feeling a sense of arousal and fear in whatever they do. And mindfulness practice here, straight mindfulness practice, is a great antidote to this. Because with GAD, we're afraid of everything. And with mindfulness, by simply allowing whatever arises in the mind to arise, we're basically doing exposure treatment for everything. We're allowing ourselves to be with whatever comes up. Also, the connecting with underlying emotions that I was talking about earlier becomes particularly useful for GAD, because very often folks who are struggling with GAD, there isn't a precipitant, there isn't a bridge or a germ that they're afraid of. Rather, there's a general fearfulness, and very often this general fearfulness is indeed fear of the tiger within, fear of some kind of emotion which the person's having difficulty even identifying, no less being with. And here, using the investigative techniques of being with emotions that we discussed previously can be very, very useful. Hypochondriasis or body worries are interesting. Oftentimes, those come about because people start to get it that they're mortal. Now, the bad news is we're mortal, and the body is going to fall apart over time, and that can be very frightening to us, especially if we've lived in the first world and had the fantasy that I'm going to live forever and I've got good medical care, so everything's going to be just fine. And this is a rather in-depth topic as to how to work with hypochondriasis, particularly when people start to avoid certain activities because they're afraid that they're going to injure themselves or worsen their condition. But in general, what we want to do here too is to connect with the underlying emotions, including connecting with the worst case fears, the kind of things we discussed about before of trying to face what you're afraid of. Allow the person to play out the illness fantasy, allow them to play out the disability fantasy, and then work with the anxiety that comes up around that. Panic disorder is very interesting because panic disorder is so deeply rooted in the desire to avoid panic attacks. Panic attacks are indeed very, very unpleasant, so it makes perfect sense that people would want to avoid having them. But of course, it's going through the world always scanning for, might this be the beginning of a panic attack every time the heart starts to race a little bit, or some people start to get panicky just because they've gone up a flight of stairs and they have a little bit of aerobic activity going on. And here, the way in which we can use a mindfulness-oriented approach is absolutely to move toward the panic feeling. And even though it turned out to be pretty bad foreign policy to say, bring them on in a war zone, this is actually the approach that works quite well here. When somebody starts to have a panic attack, to actually bring it on. I'm a bit of a cowboy about this. If I have a patient come in to see me and they're in the office and they say, I think I'm going to have a panic attack, if I have a therapeutic relationship with them and some trust built up over time, I'll say, oh good, this is an opportunity to work with it. Can you bring it on? And they may start sweating or panting or something, and I'll say, well, can you intensify it a little bit more so we can really work with this? Well, is that as strong as you can get it? And I'll keep egging them on to make it stronger and stronger. Very interesting phenomena. If you're having a panic attack and you shift the cognitive framework from how do I get this to stop to how do I amplify this, it tends to be very hard to maintain it. And once a person has realized that it's actually hard to maintain a panic attack when you deliberately try to do that, it can help shift their whole relationship to the disorder. Now, another rather broad category of anxiety disorders involves social anxiety. And this can take on so many different forms. It can be the fear of public speaking, a fear of blushing when I'm in front of other people, maybe a fear of using a toilet in public and then having difficulty urinating or defecating because of that fear, a fear of crowds, a fear of parties. And sometimes there are slightly more unusual variations of this that people don't talk about but are not that uncommon, like the fear of being watched at work, or the fear of writing or signing a check in public and having somebody see that, or the fear of choking or spilling food in public. And these almost always come down to some kind of a feeling that if this bad thing happened, I would be humiliated, I wouldn't be able to bear the feeling of humiliation, and people wouldn't want me anymore. Either I'd lose my job, lose the client, not get love anymore, the relationship would end. And here too, playing out the worst case scenario and letting the person actually imagine and be with and sit with the feeling of humiliation that would occur can be helpful. Because what you can't guarantee that these things aren't going to happen. There simply is no way to do that. But what we can guarantee is that it's possible to bear the feelings associated with the event happening. And here, all of the practices we've been talking about to date of increasing the capacity to be with the discomfort and using mindfulness practice to do that allows us to be with the discomfort associated with all of these embarrassing events. Finally, I want to mention what I think is a kind of funny fear, but it's not really an anxiety disorder, but it's so prevalent in our culture, it's worth mentioning. And this is FOMO. I was once contacted by a British journalist who said, I'd like to interview you about FOMO. And I said, sure. What's FOMO? Because I hadn't heard of it before. And increasingly, it's become a thing. And it's fear of missing out. And this is this pervasive kind of anxiety that somehow everybody else is having a good life and I'm not. And since the advent of Facebook, I think this is a lot worse because people get to see how everybody they've ever known in their life is having wonderful parties, beautiful relationships, and all of that. And what's wrong with me? How am I missing out? And the way in which I see mindfulness as an antidote to that is start to enjoy the little things. That if we can mindfully, we haven't been emphasizing this aspect of mindfulness because this is the course on anxiety disorders, but if I can simply enjoy eating a tangerine or enjoy the feeling of the breeze on my face or feel grateful about being able to walk and enjoy the sensations of walking, I'm going to be much less afraid of missing out. So what we see is across the board, the vast majority of these anxiety problems follow the same general principles. It's mostly about wanting to avoid the feeling of anxiety, doing things to try to ward off that anxiety, and getting ourselves into more trouble because of it or having a more restricted life because of it. And in general, the way in which we're going to use mindfulness practice is to open to the experience and increase the capacity to be with the discomfort, but we're going to vary it some depending on the particular kind of difficulty that a person is struggling with.